It's Graham, right? You have an unusual spelling.
Yeah, I don't know where it comes from, but I've seen it a few times. It's just Graham like anything else, and base as in baseball.
Well, it's easier to say than it looks.
Yeah, it's simple.
This is a gorgeous book. I keep turning at the pages and studying the pictures, because you can take a picture and look at it for hours, and you find all sorts of mysterious things in there, tucked away, hidden away. Tell me about this book and what you are trying to do.
Okay. I should go back to the first book, which I did back in Australia about 4 years ago now. That was called My Grandma Lived in Gooley Gulch. What I did was I wrote a poem, and it was basically a vehicle for me to be able to draw all the Australian animals. It was just a story which included a lot of animals in it. So that was my first book, purely about Australian animals. So it was quite a natural progression to doing a book like Animalia, which has animals from all over in it. And as for being an alphabet book, that was almost a mistake, or it was a by-the-by anyway, because what I wanted to do was do a book with animals and with lots of detail, and to do it alphabetically seemed like a natural way of ordering the book.
Your conception of the illustrations there, are these the original size?
No, the book is about, I suppose, it was about 13 inches high. The original pictures were 2 feet high. They're 2 foot by 3 foot, so they're quite large, and they're executed in watercolors and colored inks, and I use the airbrush and a lot of, I suppose, mixed media, because there's also pencil and even sort of felt tip markers in particular places, but that's just for special effects. So they are bigger than that, and that's how I managed to get the detail into the pages. Working at that size, I think it would be almost impossible.
They've been beautifully reproduced.
They have, and I'm very, very proud of it, too, that the whole job was, in fact, done in Australia. When it first came out, I was very disappointed that in Australia, books like this, fully coloured picture books, tend to go offshore. They tend to go to Hong Kong to be printed. I thought, why can't it be done in Australia? And so we did it, and they did us proud.
Well, it was printed and bound in Hong Kong.
This one is.
Yes.
Actually, just having said that, we're going to have to. What happened was that the very first printings were done in Australia for all the Australian editions, and all the plates were made in Australia, and all the separations, and also all the transparencies were done in Australia. And the whole thing was done there, and because the Americans needed the books along with the English and the Canadians, quick smart. The whole job had to go to Hong Kong just for the overseas editions. But in Australia, they're all done locally. So the colour that you get there is a result of the separations and the transparency work.
But Harry Abrams used the same plates.
That's right.
So
they're the Australian plates. That's right.
So there's no physical difference in this version as compared to the Australian.
No, plates. None whatsoever. That's right.
And it's the same size.
Which is confusing, yeah, but that's right.
Now, these pictures that you have are so intricate and involved, it must have taken you forever to do it.
The book in total took 3 years. Now, the first year of that, I was just working part-time because I didn't have any money. I couldn't do it full-time. I had to do other illustration work as well. And at the end of a year, I had done about 3.5 pictures with something like 23 or 22.5 to go, which was a pretty depressing thought. But at that stage, Harry and Abrams, the American publisher, saw the book at the Frankfurt Book Fair and bought it on the spot, which then meant that along with the Americans, and we also got a commitment from the British and from the Canadian publishers, that they could supply me with an advance, which kept me going for the next 2 years. So it was 3 years all told.
You wanted to do an illustrated book of animals, but in your original concept, had you planned to alphabetize these animals?
Well, it started off actually with the horrible hairy hogs. And what I wanted to do, I just had an image, which it sounds sort of corny, but it flashed in of these great big hogs galloping across a stormy landscape on big horses. And I just wanted to illustrate that particular picture. And as I thought about it, I suddenly came up with the alliteration, horrible hairy hogs hurrying homeward on heavily harnessed horses. And so the project sort of really fell into place from there on in, because what I did was illustrate that subject matter and then put as many things as I could fit within artistic boundaries within the picture. I put them all in, beginning with the letter H. So you finish up with hamsters and hippopotamus and handcuffs and hummingbird hovering and hamburger and all sorts of things like that.
So all of the elements within the picture begin with the letter H.
I can't say all of them, because you have to have props, if you like. Like, say, you've got to have grass, which constitutes a hill on which there is a house. But you can't have absolutely everything beginning with H. It just doesn't work that way.
Looks like you came pretty close.
Well, I mean, some of them. The S page is the one which is most densely packed. Although E is the most common letter of the alphabet, it just so happens that S is the one which has the most words beginning with it. So although it's a smaller page, it's on one page rather than on double page spread, it contains more things than any other page. And that's the six slithering snakes sliding silently southward.
I understand that there is in each picture an image of yourself as a child.
That's right. Well, and there were a couple of reasons for him being in there. The first was I wanted...
Excuse me, just interrupt. Yeah. I can see you in this picture, and I can see you in a couple of them, but the others, I pored over these pictures, and I couldn't find you.
You just didn't look close enough. Now, he's always there. He's not always easy to find, but he's...
How long does it take?
To find him? Oh, it depends. I think I have found generally that kids find him quicker than adults, because I don't know why. Maybe they're just more used to doing that sort of thing. But he's always there. You can always know positively when you found him because of what he's wearing. He's always wearing an orange and yellow shirt and blue jeans and a pair of white shoes. So you always know that it's him. And you just got to look a little bit more in some than others. He's always there. But the reason he's there is to provide a continuity between the pages, because each page is really vastly different in emotion and stylistically. And this little boy sort of links the whole thing together. He's also, if you like, the first game to be played when you first pick up the book to find this little fellow. And in doing that, you discover all the other things. While you're looking for him, you begin to see lots and lots of other details that you would miss otherwise.
Oh, you sure do. This book is not necessarily for children, is it?
No, it's not. It's necessarily a book for me because, well... I started off with this concept of the horrible hairy hogs, and I loved doing that page, and it remains until this day probably my favorite, along with the lazy lions lounging in the local library. But I have a confession to make, that I'm a chronic Peter Pan, in that I never intend to grow any older than I absolutely have to. So my theory, at least, is that if I do a book which I enjoy, which I really get a kick out of, and which I love, then chances are kids are going to like it too. And along with that, I believe that anybody who talks down to kids in a book or in any other form is courting disaster. No sooner does a kid just twig that they may be being talked down to, and you've lost them for good. So if there's words in this book, and I can assure you there are words and concepts in Animalia which are quite difficult, quite grown up, I make no apology, because if a child doesn't understand it, well, they can jolly well go and find out what it means. And if they see an object and they don't know what it is, well, this is learning. And if they're enjoying it at the same time, they'll learn better.
Now, Animalia, is that the correct...
Well, actually, the reason I'm calling it, I started off calling it Animalia, because in Australia they call it Animalia, mate. But I've just been in England, where it was launched last month, and of course in England they say Animalia. So I've got into the habit of saying that, but you call it Animalia and it'll be fine.
Well, your technique is so sophisticated, and you're such a young guy, but you must have really devoted yourself to your art and your study. Tell me about that.
I had always wanted to be an artist. Again, that sounds like a cliche. It happens to be true. And I wanted to be a commercial artist, so I thought. So I went through high school and then went to college, and I studied graphic design, which probably shows in the paintings. And I dutifully then went into advertising in Australia. And I hated it, and they hated me. I went through three jobs within about 18 months, and finally got the boot from the last one, so I was sort of put on my mettle and I went out and decided I would try and start working in the field which I really felt I wanted to do, which was illustration, because I never got the chance to do that in advertising. So basically my education was a graphics education, but I always tried to change every project into an illustration project, you know what I mean, rather than graphics.
Now, the original paintings, where are they?
They are now in various homes across Australia. What I did when the book was finished last year, I held an exhibition to coincide with the launch. And I suppose it was gratifying but rather embarrassing that by the day of the launch they had all been pre-sold, every single one of them, except for the Horrible Hairy Hogs and the Lazy Lions, which we've kept just to hang on our own wall one day, when we get a wall to hang it on, that is.
Tell me about your first book.
The first book, My Grandma Lived in Gooley Gulch, I wrote a poem. I don't know what came over me. I hadn't written a poem for years and years, but I thought I'd have a go at it because I wanted to write a book which was about Australian animals. That was the concept. And it seemed like that was a nice way of supporting the concept, was to write a poem. It's a straightforward 32-page picture book about this lady who is ostensibly my grandma, who goes off on a holiday with a penguin, with a pelican and a wombat, and they go off to the seaside, and it's got a rather sad ending because grandma gets taken away by a big wave and she just floats out to sea and is never seen again. But in the course of her travels, we're introduced to the Australian animals, which are quite an extraordinary bunch.
You were not born in Australia, were you?
No, I was born in England. I don't tell many people that. I don't tell Australians that for a start. But we moved out there when I was 8, and I've lived there ever since for the last 21 years.
What's it like?
Melbourne's great.
This where is you live in Melbourne?
That which is down in the south of Australia. Up north, it must be very, very difficult to live and work there. They only have two seasons. It's either hot and wet or it's hot and dry. And I think working under those conditions would be very, very difficult. Whereas down in Victoria, which is a state that Melbourne's in, we get four seasons like normal sort of countries. And I like it very much. Well, we get snow, but not in Melbourne. You have to go out into the hills around Melbourne to get snow. But it's never in the streets of Melbourne. No.
Is there any kind of art colony in Australia?
There's a small band of illustrators who we all sort of know one another and all sort of start bemoaning how little money we ever make out of the job. As far as art, yes, there has always been a recognisable Australian art, right back from as early as the Heidelberg School and even before that, the colonial painters. So it does have an identity of its own, but of course we're very much influenced by overseas America and by England and Europe. Everywhere, it's a big melting pot now. Everybody's getting influenced by everybody else, of course, and that's a good thing.
What's the book industry like in Australia?
Well, I can only talk with any sort of knowledge of the children's book industry, and the answer would be that it's very, very difficult for everybody involved because we've got a small population, and our costs are as great as anybody else's in the world. So I think every publishing company in Australia which does have a children's book section is very aware that it's a very delicate balance between books that do meet the bottom line requirement, you know, financially, and those that don't. As a result, illustrators and authors of children's books are lucky to make a living out of it. I would say out of the illustrators that I know, there's perhaps four who are able to actually do it full-time and support themselves on their work. It's very often a labour of love, or a labour at least of optimistic looking towards the future that one day they'll get one that that takes off.
So, and I suppose overseas sales are important too.
Oh, yes, for an Australian artist, getting overseas is still, always has been, a very important part of your sort of program. And my first book, My Grandma Lived in Gooley Gulch, never got out of Australia. Although I heard just the other day that I think there's going to be a few thousand copies coming to America, which is a start at least. Animalia is the very first, or Animalia, for those Americans out there listening, is the first book which I've done, which has actually been published by an overseas publisher, and in this country it's Abrams.
But you've also, I think you just said you had a Canadian publisher and an English publisher.
Yeah, well, they all signed at different times. We've got Irwin in Canada, and Macmillan are doing the book in England, and it's Penguin, or Viking Kestrel, which is their children's hardback imprint, are doing it in Australia. So it's actually with four different publishers, which is strange.
So you're going across the round of the globe to talk about your book.
Well, yeah, it's turned out that way. We actually set off last January, my wife and I, and the first half of the trip was pretty well completely holidays. I was doing a lot of research for a new book, but that was fitted in around the holidays. We went for a walk up in Nepal for a couple of weeks.
Where?
In Nepal, yes. Mm-hmm. In the Annapurna district, which was beautiful, in the foothills of the Himalayas. And then another very long-held ambition we were able to fulfill, which was to go down to Kenya and Tanzania, and we spent a month in the game parks, which for somebody who's interested in wildlife is like heaven on earth. It's just the most incredible place. But we eventually finished up over in Europe, and last month the book came out in England, and it's this month in America and Canada, and it's home soon.
Is this your first trip to the U.S.?
It is, and it's only for 2 weeks. It's crazy. I mean, this gigantic country, and I'm here for 2 weeks, so I guess I'll have to come back. I have to write another book.
That's right. Any culture shock?
Yeah, it's pretty racy, although I found New York to be less scary than I thought it was going to be. Everybody has got their, I suppose, their images of New York as some amazing super city where you get mugged at every street corner, I suppose, and that it's a very, very difficult place to exist in. And I found it wonderfully easy and very friendly, actually. So I'm really impressed.
I don't know. I've lived in New York for 20 years. It seems to me it's a city on the brink of collapsing.
It has a slight desperation about it, which Melbourne doesn't have. I think there's probably more room in Melbourne, and people are just a little bit more laid back, as Australians tend to be.
I got on the subway this morning near my house, went down the west side, mm-hmm. and the express lines, the subways were out. I don't know, there was a stalled train, and so no express trains could go below 96th Street, so everybody's trying to get on a local.
Yeah.
Which goes down the local track, and by the second stop below 96th Street, nobody can get on.
Just packed.
Or off.
They'd have to get hold of those pushers with white gloves that they have in Tokyo, where they just cram
people.
There
was no more room in the subway, even with pushers. And, of course, here are people waiting and waiting and waiting. And the more people trying to get on, the more the doors don't close.
Yeah.
Because people get in the way. And so there was that sense of desperation. I was lucky. I was able to get on 96th Street.
Cling to your spot.
Yeah, I got a fairly good spot. You know, you try to mark your spot in the subway. You get behind a pole, get a little protection from the people who crowd in.
Well, what is the population of New York?
It's about 8 million.
8 million. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, the whole of Victoria, where we live, is about 4. And this is an area the size of England.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very different sort of lifestyle, I suppose.
That's only the population, of course, during the day.
Oh, the people who actually come into Manhattan.
Yes, 1 million come into Manhattan alone. And if you've seen the maps, you know how Manhattan is just a little island. And hard to get into because it's you have to approach it by bridge and by tunnel. And if one of those bridges, one of those tunnels goes out, if there's an accident or something,
total congestion.
Because the other arteries cannot handle the overflow.
The extra load, no. Well, what are they doing about it? Any plans?
No. We don't
put up
need
with
any
it.
More tunnels or bridges. Where are you going to put the cars?
That's true enough.
There's not. One of the major problems is that, and it was a political decision, they let the subway system collapse. Almost collapse. It's beginning to come back, depending on the line. But they stopped maintaining the cars, and the subway lines, in effect, stopped running, and so people took to the street, and they started carpooling, they started taking vans and buses. The buses couldn't handle it all, so it became chaotic up in the streets.
Sounds like madness.
Yeah, it's very difficult. At the same time, it's an extremely glamorous city, and
Yes.
You can walk down Fifth Avenue and see celebrities or go to major restaurants. And
this is right. When we were in London last month, we were going around playing Monopoly board, like with the British, and the Australian versions of Monopoly, is all the London streets, And we found when we get over here, we know the streets, all the Madison Avenue and Times Square and, of course, Broadway and all those things. They're just as well known in Australia as anything in England. So it's certainly got an aura about it, which is nice to come here and find. It's really an ordinary city where people live. It's a pretty special one. It's a pretty big one. And I suppose it's culture shock as far as goes.
When I came here, it was a culture shock because New York is not like any other city in the United States. And, I mean, I had difficulty. I thought the currency was going to be different. And, you know, I didn't understand there were certain customs and rules and regulations.
Oh,
you know,
like that, tipping.
Yeah, well, you know, for example, in some cities, you engage a taxi cab.
Yeah.
And you get into the front seat with a taxi driver. You don't do that. <either.
laughs> You'll wonder what's going on, I guess.
That's right. I think he's being robbed or something. Little things like that. I mean, there are different customs here. And also, it's very easy to go into neighborhoods where nobody speaks English.
Yeah, yeah. This, I suppose, I'm used to that a bit because Melbourne is a very multicultural city. We've got a very large Greek and Italian population, and now a very large Vietnamese population coming through, as well as probably everybody else you could imagine, Japanese. So that isn't so sort of strange. It's just the scale on which everything seems to happen here. Like the idea of having a whole neighborhood where nobody speaks English is pretty mind-blowing.
That's true. In fact,
for an English person.
I waited in line a while back at the county clerk's office because I was supposed to report for jury duty.
Oh, yeah.
And I waited to get out of it, and there was a young man and his mother were ahead of me, and he told the clerk, he said, "My mother can't serve on the jury because she doesn't speak English." And the clerk said, "Well, how long has she been in this country?" And he said, 20 years.
He
said, 20 years and she doesn't speak English? And she claimed not to be able to speak English. But I believe
pretty determined not to be able to. Actually.
Well, some of these ethnic neighborhoods are so insulated that, and I'm not talking just about Spanish, but I mean, you could go into the Haitian neighborhoods and
it becomes unnecessary, I guess.
Russian in the Brighton Beach area and Greek in the Astoria area.
Wow.
Chinatown. And you go on and on. And some people just never speak English. They can get along fine. They have their own newspaper. They're about, I think there are 16 or 18 daily Chinese newspapers alone.
Well, I've got to say that I don't think this book is for them. Being a very much an English language book, we're going to be right out on at the end of the long period on this one.
It really is a beautiful book, and I congratulate you. And
thank you.
I think this is going to be a book that appeals to every age because I've been fascinated by it.
I hope so.
Every time I have a few minutes, I grab the book and start studying the pictures.
Yeah, you've got to be careful. It starts getting obsessive. Once you get hooked on going through page by page, you better put aside a few weeks. No, that's what happens.
Well, it certainly is a beautiful book, Graham Bees. Congratulations. Thank you very much for stopping in to chat with me.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.